Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, truckers. Welcome to Redneck and I, all things trucking and then some. Hope you enjoy the show.
Well, hello, hello, hello. This is Tiffany with Redneck and I's Radio and Women of Redneck and I's coming to you on Wednesday, February 1st. Can you believe it? First month of 2023 is over. We're working on February. Tomorrow is that stinking Groundhog Day, so we all know what he's going to say. Six more weeks of winter. Doesn't he always? Here in East Liverpool, we are looking at 23 degrees. We had sun today, so that was a plus. And I also got the grandbaby today, so he's sitting here laughing at me and making noises and throwing toys at me. So this is going to be an interesting show tonight. So I really didn't prepare a whole lot to talk to you guys about tonight, only because, you know, like I said, grandbaby, Greg's going to be coming in probably in the next half hour, 45 minutes, probably more close to half hour. So it's like one after another. But today is, it's February. You know, we all know what comes up in March, and it's Matt down there in Louisville. And we had talked about maybe going, but I think we're going to pass on it this year only for the fact that, you know, it's just not the same anymore. It just wouldn't be the same. Some of our people that used to come all the time aren't going to be there, and, you know, some of our members alone won't be there. So I think we've all just kind of decided that's good. We don't need to be there. So, but I did find a couple things that I wanted. Okay, I got to go to the right email first. Okay. Oh, don't you hate when you find something, then you lose something, and you know it was right there, and I had it brought up so I would find it? Okay, that's not what I wanted. Ooh. Okay, here's something I want to talk to you guys about. Because we all know how the weather's been, and it's been crazy, and, you know, roads getting closed down and everything else. This happened actually 2 days ago out in Wyoming. You know, it says I-80 in Wyoming closes again after a fatal pileup, which is kind of natural. It kind of happens out there all the time, doesn't it? You know, maybe not always a fatal pileup, but, you know, there is a lot of issues with the roads because naturally, as most of you guys all know, out there they get a heck of a lot more snow than we do, huh, Waylon? Yes. Okay, so Interstate 80 in Wyoming closed again on Tuesday morning after high winds and low visibility caused yet another crash. The interstate has been closed on and off after a winter storm induced whiteout conditions and snarled traffic on Thursday, leaving motorists stranded en route. I-80 closed between Laramie and Cheyenne. Closure is due to crashes and winter conditions and 50-plus mile-per-hour winds having created significant blowing and drifting snow and poor visibility. Whiteout, ground blizzard conditions early Tuesday morning on, Tuesday morning 1:31 through Wednesday evening 2:01. So they're saying this could still go on today out there too, clear up until this evening, which I'm not sure. I'm going to see if I can find an update on this or not. On Saturday, within 2 hours after I-80's reopening, after Thursday's crashes, two more pileups, one involving a whopping 44 vehicles resulting in injuries and a single fatality, shutting down the roadway again. A large crash involving many vehicles occurred around 1:30 p.m. at mile post 266 on the I-80 westbound. The large-scale event will take the Wyoming Highway Patrol hours to investigate, and the road will be closed for an undetermined amount of time, said the Wyoming Department of Transportation on Saturday of the large pileup from Saturday. I mean, these trucks are just sprawled everywhere. It just looks like you shook them in a cup and threw them out. For the most up-to-date information on the I-80 status, you can call 511 or, as it says, click here, but we'll click here in a minute and see. Many commuters on YDOT social media pointed to pictures posted from highway cameras in disbelief that the state would reopen the road in such snowy conditions. But the episode likely serves as an important reminder for anyone trucking. The simple fact that a road is open doesn't mean it's safe. And you guys all know this. You know, when you go out there, it's, you know, you're taking these roads and you're taking them, you know, there's snowy conditions like this, and you know they're not going to be the safest roads, but you're supposed to be professional drivers. You're supposed to know your limitations. You should know when it's not safe for you to drive. We all know a lot of the cars out there, they're not the safest because they get scared in the road conditions. They'll start slowing down and hitting their brakes or, you know, running with their four ways on, just causing more problems than not. Okay. It goes on to say, what we do in Wyoming specifically is we have variable speed limit signs, said Staley. I-80 is an 80 mile per hour in the state, but we can reduce that, and we reduced it down to 45 and tried to encourage everyone to reduce speed because we knew conditions were pretty treacherous. She went on to admit that I-80, regardless of conditions, can become a racetrack after drivers have been stranded, but stressed that maintaining slower speeds and more distance between vehicles does help. Okay, after you're stuck in a traffic jam like that one and they get the road open again, you're going to have these ones that's like some of these drivers that are on a time limit, like most of you guys are, or racing against the clock. Now they're out of hours from sitting in a pileup for the past 6, 7, 8 hours or 2 days, whatever the case may be. So they're going to be hurrying to get to their destination or hurrying to get to a truck stop, and then they're going to cause another wreck. Even the cars that are trying to get home after sitting there for, you know, 3 or 4 hours, they're going to be in a hurry to get home, so they're going to be driving faster than what they need to be, and they're going to cause an accident too. Okay, for the professional drivers, that can be a big ask. One driver pointed her finger at the FMCSA, seemingly arguing that hours of service regulations too heavily being pushed the envelope in dicey conditions, meaning again, pushing that clock. Dear FMCSA, wrote Michelle, you can micromanage the trucking industry by using the word safety, quote unquote, but you are not, in reality, making anyone on the roadway safer. This happened within an hour of reopening. There will be bazillion excuses, but no solutions, yet again. Okay. This one picture they're showing here is the traffic resulting from the closure screwed heavily towards tractor trailers. That's what you see, just multiples, just in a line. And I can only see in the picture so far up to see taillights, and it just kind of bears around to the right on a bend. And you can tell just by looking that 90% of them are semis. Okay. And the last of it here is, Staley said YDOT took special precautions when reopening I-80 by doing a strategic open with patrol cars setting the pace. She said, and the drivers using their best judgment in icy conditions and suggested checking on live cameras showing highway conditions, but continued that they only show certain locations and snapshots, and there's no substitute for owner ops ensuring their own safety. First and foremost, as so many experienced owners have advised, trust your own eyes and experience and don't allow any authority, whether a dispatch or a state authority, to dictate driving decisions. And that comes right back to it. That's the thing. You guys all know when you're safe enough to do it, or when it's safe enough, or you feel that the roads are safe enough for you to do it. So always make that decision on your own, even if your dispatcher or whoever says, you know, you got to go, that load's got to be there. If you don't get it there, then we're going to fire you. Well, then you know what? Fire me. Because as Greg has always said, I was looking when I found this one, and I'm still looking. So, okay. Like I said, that was one of them. And, oh, there was one I seen. Let me get back here. Okay. Um, where is, it's going to drive me insane because I found one about diesel prices, the difference between the diesel price and the gas prices, one that they did, and now I can't find it. I hate when that happens. Oh, it's going to drive. Oh, there it is. Ha ha. I knew I'd find it. Okay. As soon as I can get the article come up, I'll tell you about it. Okay. It states, and these, you know, again, Overdrive magazine. This is actually, and I don't know why they brought it back in again, but this is actually from December 20th, actually, when it was updated. Okay, the headline is, why is diesel getting so much more expensive than gasoline? It says, since the start of 2022, the Energy Information Administration reported average gas prices per gallon of gasoline has climbed from $3.14 to $3.49, with the most common gas prices in America right now being at $2.99. Diesel, on the other hand, climbed over the same period from $3.61 to $5.31. or about a 38% jump at the pump, while gasoline only moved a bit more than 10%. But compared to gasoline, diesel is less refined product, and for decades, up until about 2004, it fetched a lower price. Outside of a few fleeting moments, diesel has been more expensive than gas ever since. GlobalPetroleumPrices.com writes that gasoline costs more than diesel in 84% of the 161 countries it tracks, with diesel in most on average 9.8% cheaper. Recent price swings may have moved those figures a bit. So, why would a product that's easier to make, that's more vital to essential economic activities like construction, farming, and yes, trucking, sell at a premium to one that's harder to make? And why do four-wheelers seem to make out on the deal? The EIA pins the answer on three main causes. Diesel demand has grown, but diesel demands, I don't believe, is any more than what gasoline demands are. Okay, transitioning a low sulfur diesel has impacted fuel production costs. And the federal excise tax on the highway diesel sits at 24.3% per gallon, while it's only 6 cents on gasoline. But the sub 18 cent tax premium on diesel hardly explains the yawning chasm between the two prices in today's world. And ideally, a free market would adapt an industry and demand changes to provide diesel at a lower cost. Tom Kloza, the global head of energy analysis at Oil Price Services, and said that the answer to expensive diesel starts with the barrel of crude oil itself. Today, diesel is a profitable part of the barrel, he said. Gasoline is not. It's not a loss, but not very profitable. Throughout the world, diesel is a molecule that still has some support in terms of pricing. And for now, it's still a molecule in tight supply. Diesel is a fuel that uses higher share of the overall barrel of crude, competes with jet fuel and other pricey petroleum products in a way that gasoline doesn't. You can take the diesel molecule, crack it, and turn it into gasoline, Kloza said. However, nobody has figured out yet how to make gasoline into diesel. As a thought experiment, Kloza walked through the example of refining, taking in 100 barrels of crude. Under ordinary circumstances, the refinery would try to get maybe 50 barrels of gasoline, 30 barrels of diesel, and then 10 of jet fuel alongside some other petroleum products. These days, every single refinery is trying to maximize the diesel cut to maybe get 45 barrels of diesel and maybe 30 gallons or 30 of gasoline, he said. there's clearly motivation to make as much diesel as possible. And refineries making 50 or more on every barrel, and billions of barrels are sold. This is unusual. There has been no other December in the history of the country or the world where diesel has fetched 50, 60, or even 80 above crude, he said. That's one reason diesel has risen so fast and remained so high. Everyone from retailers to traders to governments are worried about serious supply chain disruptions, Kloza said. Very, very slow stocks of diesel in the U.S. and they saw the fuel of trucking trading so high above the price of crude, with worry soaring over potential cold winter and demands for heating oil. Where diesel would become highly sought after because it doubles as heating oil in much of the U.S., Northeast, and Europe. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has battered traders. The outlook for natural gas and other heat sources, focusing a lot of attention on diesel at a time of historically low supply. I'm not going to keep going because this is still like another half. Okay. So it gives you the stocks trades on it and everything else, which, you know, I know nothing about stocks, so I don't even attempt to even read anything about stocks. Okay. So it goes on. So really a big part of why these have this differential is the chance of a very cold winter requiring a lot of burning of dissolvent, said Kloza. I think the only reason diesel fetches such a premium is that people are worried about winter and heating oil. But so far in Europe, winter hasn't been that bad. And around here, it hasn't been that bad either. You know, we have natural gas, so it's a little bit nicer, but still, it comes right down to it. Our gas price did go up per, you know, liter, however they read it, but it only went up like 2 cents. So it wasn't like it was a drastic jump. But even like heating oil, I know it's up in price. You know, when some people said that they used to be able to get their tank filled, you know, last year, meaning, you know, winter of 21 into 22, they were getting their tank filled for, you know, say $600 or up to $800 or more. My aunt got hers done here a few weeks ago, and it was almost $1,000. And that didn't even top it all the way off. So it sucks the way it works, but if you want to stay warm, it's either that, you know, paying for the heating cost, or actually getting electric heaters, and then you have the risk of burning your house down or having your electric bill. The traders typically look at the market 40 days ahead. So they're currently trying to estimate demand in January when the expected gasoline demand will die down from holiday highs, but diesel demand could stay up. Oil traders speculated on higher futures can cause oil producers and retailers to hold on to their stock or raise prices in anticipation of greater worth. Add to all of it with the possibility of a rail strike, which they were doing it. I don't think they actually went through with the rail strike, but it was, you know, they did for a day. But anyways. So, I mean, we know that was a part of it. Might have all the bulk hazmat movement, Kloza said. DEF, not diesel itself, may find itself in trouble, and more likely it would harm gasoline prices rather than diesel, as ethanol, a critical component in a popular E10 gas, wouldn't get its normal rail shipments. So we know that our diesel prices have come down. They haven't come down near as much as all of us would like. They're still not down below gas prices. Gas prices have come down. But it still comes back to the fact that, you know, with all of that, it's like, really? Why? Just, you know, totally, why does it have to be so high? Or is it ever going to come back to what it used to be back, you know, even 4 years ago? I mean, we're never going to get the 99 cents a gallon diesel. That'll never happen again. But maybe it will come down more, especially when they start getting an overabundance of it because of the fact, you know, they're coming out with all these quote-unquote electric vehicles and the electric trucks. And, you know, they want to fan out all the diesels because, you know, they're going to cause a bigger carbon footprint than the electric ones will. So, yeah, I don't care. Diesel might go, you know, up high again. Oh, excuse me. But compare that to an electric vehicle, because they haven't said what it's going to cost you, because they're not going to give you the electricity to recharge those trucks for free. So nobody has said exactly what they're thinking, what the cost per kilowatt to recharge your truck when you're out on the road. Because they're going to have to put them in these different truck stops. So it's like, okay, so how are they going to manage to do that? Okay. Let's see. Not a whole lot of stuff from today, to be honest with you, that they've posted. Let's see. Oh, I'm kind of scanning over one here about, okay. All right, ELD-1 fighting FMCSA registry revocation. Okay, ELD-1 plans to fix issues that led the FMCSA revocation. The Federal Military Safety Administration on January 31st removed the ELD-1 electronic logging device from the list of registered devices for failing to meet minimum ELD requirements. According to the company, more than 10,000 users are affected by the revocation. So do any of you guys have that? Is that the one you guys use? I don't know what anybody uses. So, okay. Radu Mirzak, CEO of ELD-1, said the company has been meeting with the FMCSA representatives over the last few months to address concerns with the device. Ultimately, we fell short, Mirzak said. He noted that the company's development team located in Ukraine have worked tirelessly through power and internet outages to complete as many of the FMC's requests as possible. I can understand, you know, everything going on over there would make it hard on them to get everything done that they wanted done. Okay, because of team's work, Mozark expects a fix for the final issue identified by the FMCSA to be solved within the next 2 weeks. As reported Tuesday, drivers using the device are required to stop using the device and revert to paper logs or logging software to record hours of service. If ELD-1 addresses the issue that led to its revocation, the FMCSA will place the device back on the register and inform the industry of the field or in the field. So there you go. If you have one, you've already been told by your dispatchers or your bosses to stop using it. So, okay. Oh, yeah, there we go. All right, snow and ice advisories across Texas. And we know because on Ed's show last night, he was talking about how he wasn't going to work. And I seen today where he actually posted that he wasn't working because of the fact of the ice and snow. So, all right. Oh, all right. Okay, so here we go. The state of Texas saw some unusual amount of winter weather on Wednesday and has issued widespread snow and ice advisories across the state. Actual road closures remained minimal and away from major interstates. The Texas Department of Transportation said that the cold weather has led to a series of power outages and reminds drivers to treat dark intersections or intersections with flashing red lights as a four-way stop. We really cannot emphasize this enough. Do not be on the roads, the National Weather Service of Fort Worth account tweeted Wednesday morning. There are going to be virtually be impassable through the day and night. Clouds are working. The roads and temperatures across the state were above freezing on Wednesday afternoon, with the Weather Service predicting the worst of it has passed. For the most up-to-date information on road closures, conditions, check the drivetexas.org. So, I know Ed said he didn't have to work tonight because of the fact that, you know, road closures. Okay, Brokerage now offers discount programs to carriers. Tech-enabled RXO brokerage platform spun out of XPO announced it has launched RXO Extra, an expanded suite of exclusive partnerships and discounts that offer carriers cost savings and help grow their business. Through RXO Extra, carriers can save money on fuel, maintenance, tires, retail, and more. These offerings are accessible on a streamlined online marketplace. At RXO, we believe in going the extra mile for carriers, who are the backbone of our business, said Lou Amon, president of RXO's truck brokerage businesses. With Extra, we have added more exclusive partnerships and discounts and built a streamlined online marketplace that makes these cost savings opportunities easy to access. As part of the launch of Extra, RXO announced three new cost-saving partnerships that build on the company's pre-existing rewards offers. Carriers can now access discounts on SiriusXM subscriptions, hotel discounts through CLC Lodging, and the DAT load boards. Good for them. Just another one to take more money off of the drivers. Alrighty. Okay. You know, I honestly have to say, I'm looking over here trying to find other stuff to talk to you guys about. All right, we'll see what we can find here. So what do you guys have to talk about? You guys have anything going on? How's the roads and life and everything in your area? Let us know. All right, we're going to take a quick little break here and talk about one of our sponsors.
This week's episode is sponsored by LTR Transportation. Come be part of a great carrier celebrating a new year with new trucks and new growth. Check them out at ltrtransportation.com or give them a call at 720-277-0030. Thank you, LTR, for being supporter of Redneckinize. Redneckinize, common sense solutions for an uncommon world.
Sorry, I was talking and forgot I muted the mic, so I hate when I do that. All right. Okay, I actually posted on my Facebook, I shared it. And it kind of threw me when I looked at it. And it's from CDL Life, or Talk CDL Trucking. It's a podcast. Okay. I found this, and this was down in, and I want you guys to tell me, did you guys see any of this or anything about this? Here is a truck. It's a reefer. And it looks like it might be, oh, it's a Pete. new bubble nose type, not a bubble nose, but anyways, a newer Pete. I don't know. I don't like them, so it's kind of hard to distinguish what they are. There is a truck pulling a reefer that the cab, bunk, everything is gone. Gone. Now, when I say gone, I mean literally gone. And the rear ends or the tandems on the trailer are gone. But when you look at the picture, the cab is behind the truck. I just want to know how in the heck. I mean, I can see, kind of think of how it might happen, but still, you know, I'm thinking, okay, that driver, you know, lost control on the road, icy conditions or something along those lines. And then it just happened to, the trailer came around and hit it and knocked the cab off. So, you know, it kind of makes me wonder, really? Is that really how it happened? But, you know, it's kind of hard to distinguish. You know, I've tried to look at it in many different ways, trying to figure it out. So I'm kind of wondering, what do you guys think? I know you can't see it, but I'm trying to get it so I can paste it so you guys can look at it. So, again, it's like, really? It kind of threw me when I looked at it. I was like, no, I thought it was Photoshop, to be honest with you. But it happened in West Memphis, Arkansas on I-40 yesterday. So, and when you read through and there's like 589 comments. And I haven't seen where there was an article to what happened because I keep looking to see if they post, you know, article on anything about what, you know, what caused it, you know. So, unfortunately, I have not found that yet. Okay. So, it kind of, like I said, it was one of those things that kind of threw me, and I was like, wow. Okay. Let's see. What you think yet, Bob? Oh. Okay. What, whoa? All right. Okay.
Oh, really?
All right. FMCSA. What? Okay. FMCSA is asking public for comment on how to regulate self-driving trucks. Keep them off the road. That's how you regulate them, right? The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is asking the public for comments on how commercial motor vehicles equipped with the automated driving systems should be regulated. On January 31st of 2023, the FMCSA issued a supplement advance notice of proposed rulemaking requesting input on how to establish a regulatory framework for ADS-equipped CMV operations. The agency previously sought public comment on the regulations of ADS-equipped CMVs in May of 2019. ADS-equipped CMVs have the potential to produce measurable safety benefits and crashes involving human error. ADS-equipped CMVs, however, present operational characteristics and challenges that may introduce new and complex safety risks that need to be monitored and may require FMCSA to notify or modify existing and or adopt new regulatory standards. ADS developers are actively encouraged in the development, testing, and limit deployment of the ADS, said the FMCSA. The FMCSA is specifically interested in three major areas of focus regarding self-driving technology. One, whether motor carriers should be required to notify the FMCSA that they are operating without a human driver in the cab of the CMB. Two, how to regulate remote truck drivers. And three, how to handle pre-trip and roadside inspection requirements for ADS-equipped vehicles. Yeah, how would they do that? You know, they can't exactly get the truck logbook and say, well, you're out of hours. You were driving too long. So it's like, really? Okay. Should carriers notify the FMCSA before operating without a human in the cab? Yes. Why wouldn't you want to notify them? The agency says that it's considering establishing a requirement for the motor carriers to notify the FMCSA that they will operate those CMVs in interstate commerce without a human driver behind the wheel. The FMCSA specifically seeks public comment on the following questions regarding highly automated ADS-equipped CMVs. 1.1. Should FMCSA require motor carriers operating level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs to notify the FMCSA before operating those vehicles in interstate commerce without a human driver behind the wheel? If so, what potential methods or procedures should be established to notify the FMCSA of these operations? 1.2. Before operating in interstate commerce, should motor carriers be required to submit information, data, documentation, or other evidence that demonstrates to the FMCSA that the motor carrier seeking to operate level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped vehicles or equipped CMVs have appropriate safety management controls in place to operate the vehicle in accordance with the manufacturer's specifications and with federal requirements? If so, please describe any recommended approaches, including the information to be provided and appropriate techniques for reviewing that information. If available, provide cost estimates and proposed approaches. 1.3. What data should the FMCSA collect and maintain regarding level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs engaged in interstate transportation? And how would such information be used and how would it improve the FMCSA's ability to oversee the safe operation of level 4 and 5 equipped CMVs? The little one was going to sleep while I was eating the rest of his bottle. Okay. 1.4, what is the current size of the level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs population? What is the anticipated size of the population in the next 5 years? What might the size of the population be in 10 years? Kind of makes you wonder, right? Because we know what they want to do now. Can you imagine what they want to do in 10 years? They're saying they're not going to be completely on the road for another few, what, 3 or 4 years anyways? That still makes you wonder. Okay, on average, how many days are the level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs expected to be operational per year? Okay, should remote truck drivers follow the same rules as other drivers? Well, duh, that's like a no-brainer, right? Yes, they got to follow the same rules because they're still operating a vehicle, 80,000 pounds and 70 feet long. Yes, they need to follow all the same rules. My opinion, okay? The FMCSA says that some carriers may use a person operating as a remote assistant who would remotely monitor the level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs and engage with the vehicle in the system if the system was unable to perform a driving test or in the case of an emergency. The remote assistant could also be called on the on to interact with law enforcement and or officials. The agency specifically asked the public comment on the following questions. 2.1, to what extent should the federal requirements otherwise applicable to CMV drivers, such as hours of service limitations, drug and alcohol testing, physical qualifications, also apply to the remote assistant who is not expected to take control of the dynamic driving task of the ADS-equipped CMV operating at level 4? Okay, 2.2, what if any aspect of the remote assistant job function may require FMCSA oversight, including minimum standards and or auditing, example is in training, physical qualifications, and other job performances related measures? Please provide rational and evidence for the recommended manner of oversight. And 2.3, are there any qualification requirements for the FMCSA should consider for remote assistance, such as a related experience as a CDL holder? 2.4, are there any specific limitations that should be imposed on the working conditions of the remote assistant, such as limitations on the number of ADS-equipped CMVs that the remote assistant is simultaneously responsible for, or the number of hours that a remote assistant may work? 2.5, are there any other considerations that the FMCSA should be aware of relating to individuals who may function as a remote assistant? So these are all really good questions, you know, and this is something I may kind of pull together and throw on our Facebook page and get people to ask questions about or answers to and see what everybody's answers are and bring it back next week. That might be something I may have to do. Okay, and how should pre-trip and roadside inspection roles impact automated CMVs? The FMCSA is also looking at whether additional inspection requirements should be appropriate for level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs to reduce overall safety risk associated with the new technology and to account for their extended periods of operation without direct human observation. Okay, the agency is looking for answers to the following questions. And there is, there's 9 of the questions, this one. Okay, first one is 3.1. Should level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs be subject to pre-trip inspection requirements for their mechanical and ADS components in addition to those specified in 49 CFR 392.7, including those which might – I hit a thing and it kind of went crazy on me – that might necessitate new inspection equipment before the CMVs are dispatched and after a specific period of operation? If so, what methods should be used to conduct these additional inspection items? What equipment components should be inspected? What documentation should be required? Who should be responsible for conducting those inspections? And what qualifications or specialized training should be required? And how frequently should the additional inspections be conducted? Yeah, because aren't there going to be different things to inspect on them than there is going to be on a regular truck? You would think, because they're not going to be have quite all the same components. Okay, in addition, if additional inspection equipment or additional qualifications for inspectors are proposed, provide an estimate of the cost associated with such additional requirements, including the approximate time to complete an additional inspection requirements, cost of any proposed training and additional inspector requirements are proposed, and the paperwork burden associated with such training. What technical barriers exist to conduct conventional roadside inspections, which require interactions with a human driver of a level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMV, and what approaches currently exist or might be developed to remove those barriers? 3.4, what, if any, pre-trip inspection requirements, documentation, and communication capability for making the results of such inspections available to law enforcement personnel should be imposed on motor carriers operating level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs as a condition for bypassing conventional roadside inspection stations? 3.5, if level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs are not required by the state to undergo roadside inspections during operation, what information should be communicated by the motor carrier and CMV to the state inspectors throughout a potential alternate pre-trip inspections and or real-time operating status and conditions of safety-critical systems such as brakes, tires, lighting systems, steering, and ADS components? And are there other data and performance information that should that would need to be made available to ensure adequate vehicle maintenance and safe operation? 3.6, what communication systems currently exist that would allow roadside inspection officers to receive information regarding level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs, and what information should be transmitted via these systems regarding the mechanical conditions of the CMV and other operational documentation, shipping documents, and origin and destination while en route? My sidekick over here is out in his high chair and his head's all dipping over. I guess he worked too hard. Okay, sorry. 3.7, under what safety situation should state inspectors and or FMCSA receive immediate notification of an unsafe maintenance or operational issue, if any? What data and information would need to be provided in assistance, such as a tow-away crash or those that disable key operation features of a CMV? Under such safety situations, what return to service process would ensure any maintenance and operation issue have been addressed? Okay, question number 8. If level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped CMVs are not subject to state roadside inspections, how would law enforcement agency and motor carriers ensure that the CMVs are not used to engage in unlawful activities, such as human trafficking, cargo theft, you know, smuggling of drugs? Okay, should level 4 and 5 ADS-equipped, this is the last question, CMVs be subject to additional post-trip inspection requirements for mechanical or ADS components of the CMV? All these comments for these is due by the 20th of March of this year. So, you know, I will post this on our Facebook page. But like I said, I really want to talk to you guys, you know, get some feedback on these questions. What do you think? You know, what is your idea on it? Do you think this is like a good thing or bad thing that they do these? I mean, for me, honestly, every time I see just an electric car around here, it makes me cringe. I couldn't imagine seeing a autonomous one, a car alone, a semi out on the road. I know they've been testing them. We've talked about them testing them. But I honestly do not ever want to see one because a computer, yes, they say computers react faster than a human does. I understand that because the microprocessors and everything are going to be quicker and they're going to snap together really quick. But there's always that, you know, that one thing that a human can take care of quicker than a computer can, like talking to the officers. But why would they even consider taking those trucks and not putting them through weigh stations or putting them through just normal roadside inspections? Doesn't make sense to me. Why would they even put that question out there? Yes, I do believe that they're going to definitely need more training to work with these vehicles, because now if you don't have somebody, okay, say with their, you know, assistants working the computers from an office somewhere. Okay, that's great. Great for them. Another job held, but a driver lost his job at the same time. But I think with them, I believe that they should all still have all the same training that every one of us went through to get our CDL. Because why would it be fair to let them go and do the same thing? Now, mind you, they will probably get paid more because they're going to say there's more work involved into it. How would that be? But that's my interpretation of what that could be, that they're going to say there's more work involved because now they're sitting there behind the wheel or behind a desk on a computer, just being, you know, not saying that they're driving the truck from a computer or from home, but they got to be there. Somebody's got to be monitoring everything, you know, with that truck, you know, all the just like you, sitting behind the wheel, monitoring all your gauges going down the road. There's got to be somebody that's got to do that for that truck too. But are they going to get the same training? They're not going to get the training because they don't have to. They don't even need a CDL to be on. Honestly, I don't know if we're going to need a CDL to do that. Because why would they need a CDL when you're right. Exactly, Holly. Holly just posted on our Facebook group chat for all of us, you know, who's going to change a flat tire or chain up in the snow and stuff like that. And it's true. Who would be the one to do all that? Because now if that comes up, but then again, you know, they may have, if it's a blowout, yeah, they're going to have, somebody's going to have to come out and do that. But just like chains, they can get the automatic chains that automatically, you know, when they do it, they just, you know, they hit a button, the chains come on. So that's how they can get away with that, I would think. Again, my idea. But it's like, how many people are going to be out of jobs when they put them on the road? And just like the inspectors, they're going to have more people out there to inspect it and learn how to do it the way that they, that it's going to need. Yes, there's going to be the same stuff that you're going to check, but who's going to be the one to check that truck when it comes in, you know, like they said, check, you know, post-trip or pre-trip, who's going to be one that's going to be doing that? Let me know what you guys think. You know, we, you know, Holly already stated about what she thought about it, but, you know, it's crazy to even the concept of even having those kind of trucks out on the road. It just kind of throws me for a loop. I don't even, you know, it's kind of hard to think about it. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. Just brief.
Today's truckers have a lot on their mind. Redneck and Eyes was founded by truckers to help truckers and others to handle life on the road better. Check them out at redneckandeyes.com. When everything goes wrong and the job still has to get done, you got a Redneck and Eyes.
Okay, sorry, I had to get up and grab a water, so I thought it was just easier to do that real quick and be done. Okay. All right, so that's food for thought to think about. Like I said, I'm going to be posting this stuff on our Facebook page because I want to see how people think about it, get their ideas. All right. I've seen this on Facebook too, and it was like, this that I'm getting these last couple stories from is from CDL Life. And this is out on 70 near Denver. It was shut down over a bridge. I-70 was shut down for a hanging semi over a bridge. So, never a good day. Never. Hopefully the driver's okay. We're going to find out. This happened on January 30th, so just a couple days ago. Interstate 70 has been shut down near Denver for a semi-truck hanging off the side the highway early on Monday afternoon. They were pulling a reefer. The accident happened on January 30th at 12:18 p.m. on Interstate 70 in Glenwood Canyon between the Docero and Glenwood Springs. According to ABC 7 Denver, both sides of I-70 were closed due to the overturned semi-truck blocking one direction and the interstate in the other direction. It is unclear if anyone was hurt in the accident. CDOT has warned travelers that they should avoid the area and speculate. No details have been laid out as of 1:40 p.m. Central Time. Sorry. I was reading something else here. Okay. Seeing if it, yeah, never gives anything else about it. Okay, so hopefully the driver is okay. There's not a link where I can go. Wait, maybe it says here. Let me see. Go to Channel 7's here, and we'll see what we got. I just don't know if they have any update on the driver. Yeah, it doesn't say.
The future of television has arrived.
Okay, there's a video here. We're going to listen to it here as soon as it gets past all this. Maybe I'll shut this off. You always hate when you start a video and you want to listen to it or watch it and you got a stupid ad that's got to go through first, and it's always just a pain in the butt, right? Okay, here we go.
We have a traffic alert tonight at 5 for those traveling in the high country. East and westbound lanes of I-70 through Glenwood Canyon are closed. And they have been for hours because of a semi-crash. This is a live picture from CDOT. You see a little bit there, kind of maybe cars getting off the interstate. This is near Becerra. State Patrol expects the closures to last through the night.
Okay, so look at these photos, and then you'll have a better understanding of as to what's happening here. That's a semi that's blocking westbound traffic because it fell on its side,
oh, yes,
and part of it is dangling over the guardrail over the eastbound lane.
Believe it or not, State Patrol says no injuries here, but to get around this, you can go north through Silverthorne, Kremlin, and Craig to Rifle. Going south, you can take U.S. 285 and U.S. 50.
Oh, and there's more. The State Patrol is also reporting a crash on I-70 westbound just east of Silverthorne. I-70 westbound is closed between Silverthorne and Loveland Pass, and this live picture from CDOT shows some of the emergency vehicles out there near the crash. So State Patrol is saying that Loveland Pass is open, but as you can see, visibility is pretty poor. It is snowy and windy out there, and really they're just telling people just avoid going to the high country today. Stay in the metro tonight if you can.
Okay, so we still don't know if the driver of the truck was okay or what. From the looks of the picture that's posted, you know, I would almost say, yeah, they survived it because it, you know, but you never know. Can't say, I mean, you can always say, yeah, you think they survived, but you can't be sure because some wrecks don't look that bad and other ones, you know, half a dozen people are dead afterwards. So, so it's kind of one of those things you got to wonder what went through their mind when they wreck and that happens. It's kind of scary in a way, don't you think? I mean, I've wrecked the truck, and when I'm talking wrecked the truck, I totaled it. I rear-ended another trailer. Luckily, we were both empty, but still, it's enough to scare you half to death, and I had only been driving just over a year. So, but anyways, that's a story for another day. Okay, so let's see what else we got going on here. Oh, let's see. That's what I wanted. Okay. So, yeah, I look at this crash, and it's like it still just kind of throws me every time I see it, see the pictures of it. When I see the pictures of any crash, it kind of, it makes you think, you know, oh my gosh, you always want to know, did they survive? Unless there is a follow-up story, you never find out. Okay. Okay. Be aware, if you're going to Detroit this weekend, you will run into a closed road, major intersection. It says the Michigan Department of Transportation is asking drivers to plan ahead for major road closures in Detroit over the upcoming weekend to allow for crews to demolish an overpass. Starting at 9 p.m. on Friday, February 3rd, both directions of I-94 will be closed between I-75 and I-96. The interstate will remain closed through the weekend and is expected to reopen at 5 a.m. on Monday, February 6th. The I-94 closure will allow crews to demolish the Case Avenue overpass over I-94. Westbound I-94 traffic will be diverted via southbound 75 and westbound I-96 back to westbound 94. Eastbound traffic will be diverted via eastbound 96 to northbound 75 back to eastbound 94. All entrance ramps to eastbound 94 from 30th Street to M10, which is Lodge Freeway, and westbound I-94 from Mount Elliott to Linwood Streets will be closed by 9 p.m. Friday and reopen 5 a.m. Monday, according to MDOT. So just be prepared. If you're going up that way, pay attention and know your routes that you're going. It says the following ramps will remain closed after the weekend closure. That's northbound and southbound M-10 to East 94, westbound I-94 to southbound M-10, John R. Road entrance ramp to westbound 94, and eastbound I-94 exit to John R. and Woodward Avenue. MDOT says that all work on this $12.4 million project would be completed by early 2024. Okay, so there you go. There's a road closure and that for you coming up here directly over the weekend. So just be prepared for that and ready. Okay. Don't you like it when you put babies asleep and in a matter of 10 minutes, boom, they're back awake again staring at you? That's all right. He's still sitting here, you know, eyeballing me, watching me. So, okay, witness. Okay, here's, oh, my Lord. I would shoot. I would be very upset for this here, okay? When you guys, oh, my Lord, I'm just reading the headline. It's like, wow. Okay. Witnesses spotted a couple spray painting a pink peat bright red in a hotel parking lot. When Florida cops arrested them for auto theft. All right. The caption right under the headline here says, they, meaning the people got arrested, get selected as Dumb Criminals of the Week Award for thinking they could spray paint a semi in a hotel parking lot and not be noticed, said the Flagler County Sheriff's Office. Two people were arrested in Florida this week on multiple charges connected to theft of a semi. Little Miss, we had this discussion, not allowed on the table. Oh, by the way, we have a new cat in the house. Her name is Little Miss. She's an outside cat, but she's a very good cat. But she doesn't understand the concept of not on the table. Okay. By the way, this is a peat that they're painting that was painted all pink, frame and all, that they're painting red. All right. Gonzalez were arrested this week on charges of resisting arrest without violence, grand theft of a motor vehicle, and felony criminal mischief, according to the Flagler County Sheriff's Office. Perez was also charged with possession of a removed vehicle identification number and possession of fentanyl. The charges stem from an incident that occurred on Monday, January 30th in Palm Coast, Florida. I mean, they did pretty good because they're painting this peat, mind you, and they taped off the headlights around the grill, the stainless, everything. They taped it off nice. Give them props for that. The FCSO says that conservatives have caught them spotting a couple spray painting a Peterbilt semi-truck in the back of a Days Inn hotel parking lot. When officers arrived on the scene, the couple fled on foot into a wooded area heading south along I-95. Officer pursued on foot and caught Gonzalez following a short pursuit. Perez was apprehended about 2 hours later, hiding in a wooded area. From FCSO, through investigative means, it was determined that Peterbilt semi-tractor had been stolen just hours earlier from Columbia County, Florida. My tractor is valued at $280,000. It ain't valued at that now. The semi-tractor's original color is pink, and the subjects were in the process of spray painting the stolen... Greg just pulled in. The stolen semi-tractor to conceal its original color when deputies arrived. Pappy's home. We get grins at Pappy's home. The semi-tractor's GPS had been disabled and removed, but was found nearby in the woods. I mean, hey, they even were using Rust-Oleum paint. Yeah. Okay, thanks to another concerned citizen calling after seeing something, our deputies were able to catch two thieves and recover a stolen sum and return it to its rightful owner, says Sheriff Rick Stolle. They also get selected as the Dumb Criminals of the Week award for thinking they could spray paint a semi in a hotel parking lot and not get noticed. Now remember, if you are a criminal, don't come to Flagler County driving stolen property and running from us, as you will only go to the Green Roof Inn tired. I think it's hilarious, mind you. These people literally took the truck, and it was pink, and then painted it red. Spray painted it, mind you. So it's like, wow, really? How crazy are you? Okay. We have a caller, so let's see who this is. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Who is this?
This is Lou.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
I am fine, and I would spray paint a pink truck.
But would you steal the truck first, then spray paint it?
Hell no. The stealing part is the stupid part. The painting a pink truck red is not.
No, it,
but Rust-Oleum is a better choice.
Yes, using Rust-Oleum paint. Hey, at least they weren't cheap criminals. They bought better paint to do it.
Yeah. That's true.
Greg's yelling from the basement. He says you can't say they didn't redneckanize it.
Yep,
that is very true. It kind of threw me when I, because I'm scrolling through, because, you know, that's what I do is find different stories to talk about and just pull people in. But when I seen that, I was like, I had to laugh about it because of the fact, you know, hello, how stupid are you?
No kidding. It was like stealing the truck was major stupid.
Yeah. Guess who's here? Who is that? Happy you coming to see him? He's all excited you're home. Oh, yes. Claire had to see him first.
I think it's your babysitting.
Oh, yeah.
What's she doing, mister?
Okay. Sorry for the beeps. I'm feeling.
Oh, you're fine. But yeah, so, you know, we get all kinds of crazy stories we run across on here to do this.
Oh, cool. I've been listening to the show for a few nights.
Hey, that's good. Yeah, because usually I come on at 7 Eastern, Ed comes on at 7 Eastern, Ed's usually done by 8 or a little after, and I usually stay on for about 2 hours, all depending. Just like tonight, I figured, oh, I'll be on here for about an hour or so. And then when he fell asleep, I'm thinking, great, he's sleeping right here. He'll be good to go. Huh. But, yeah, so that's how we are
right
here.
The accident thing was an interesting statement.
Which one?
The accident.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you look
We've
at the picture
on I-70 in Kansas City, Kansas, we've had 2 days in a row an accident in the same location.
Well, that should be telling ODOT there something, right?
Right.
Or not ODOT, you know what I mean.
There's
yeah,
right.
The Highway Patrol, whatever. Greg's in the kitchen. What does ODOT know? Do
and it's not even icy. Or rainy.
Right.
So, yeah. Everybody's forgetting their coffee before getting in their vehicles?
Huh.
What other articles you got going?
Oh, I'm just looking. Because like I said, I'm always looking for something. And when I find the funny ones, that's the funniest part about it. Holy mackerel.
Me truck, it's a bit nippy out.
I bet. Where are you at now?
In Abilene, Kansas.
Just
popping off my tank so I can do some local work tomorrow and Friday.
So you're doing mostly just all local now?
No. No, I like to go to Colorado and back on a dedicated.
Yeah.
But we got a birthday party I helped stage. I called the right person, and they got it figured out. So I can't miss the birthday party. And if I do
my dedicated run,
I will.
Yeah.
So I'll just run some trailers back and forth, about 60 miles each way, and that'll keep me busy for a few hours.
Right.
Increase the paycheck.
Okay, here's another story.
Thank God
for professional trained drivers. Arizona trucking officials say in response to alarming footage, a pedestrian on six-lane highway. A trucking official in Arizona is applauding professional truck drivers in the wake of alarming footage of a pedestrian dodging traffic on a busy highway. Fox 5 was sent dash cam footage in the West Valley. Miraculously, the man was not injured and no accidents occurred, but the footage has trucking officials alarmed and thankful for the skills of truckers. In the video, the pedestrian stands straddling lanes, narrowly avoiding a crash with a truck ahead of him and one filming just behind him. I was just astonished by the video. Thank goodness everyone is okay and didn't get this call of, we were in a traffic accident because somebody was afraid they jumped in the president, CEO of the Arizona Trucking Association. Thank God for professionally trained drivers. There were a lot of commercial trucks on the freeway. You didn't see them overreact, slam on their brakes, hit another vehicle because somebody was trying to run across lanes of traffic, which is something an untrained driver might have done, is to swerve and overcorrect, and it could have been a horrible accident, he continued. You can't fix stupid. And when somebody is out there running on the freeway, that is a really hard thing to train. You just have to make sure that you are trained in instincts that are being calm and not overreacting kick in. They don't realize that they are putting other people, Jeffrey said Bradley, they are putting other people's lives at risk. Yeah.
No kidding.
Like I said, you just can't fix stupid.
You can't.
So.
Oh. Running across the whole freeway?
Yes. He was literally standing in the middle of the lanes and just kind of weaving it around and running across in front of people.
You
should
run over your
dumbass. Yeah. I heard that, mister. Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing that nobody was, you know, injured while this guy was being an idiot, but still.
Right. That's crazy.
Yep, you're right.
It's bad enough when you have the construction people out there trying to fill
holes. This is true.
Reese.
Oh, boy. This is a video we'll have to watch. Unfortunately, I can't, though. I have to post it. It says watch the video, so there is a...
It would break it up a little bit.
when that video, when I was playing that video. You know what? It's just you. I'm not getting another mic. Okay, it says, Dallas-Fort Worth Jeep Club lends a hand to truckers stuck on icy roads.
Why? They should have everything in their trucks, food and everything.
Yeah. A Dallas area Jeep Club took to the roads on Tuesday to lend a hand to truck drivers stuck at the bottom of icy roadways and caught some of the action on film. Ice slush and freezing temperatures stuck many parts of Texas on Tuesday, January 31st, and the Dallas area was no exception. Because of the treacherous conditions, the Carnal's Off-Road Club, a group of people who drive Jeeps, decided to forgo their regular off-road rides for more useful activity, helping truckers who were not able to get traction on the Dallas-Fort Worth area roadways. We are pulling semis, says Angela Munn, a member of the Jeep Club. Tow straps, shackles, you name it, we've got everything. And all I keep thinking is, you know, we had Jeeps, and they got stuck more than they got unstuck. And they're out there pulling semis? Alrighty then. Okay, it says, we pulled a couple cars out, but mostly the trucks. I know they are probably tired from driving, so it's good to help them out a little while. We can. It's just sad to see them stuck, she added. My dad's a trucker. I feel for them, and I want to do everything I can to help them out. And I know the rest of the guys do, too. The reality is, it's bad out. We just want people safe. The group of Jeeps worked together to get enough traction to pull multiple trucks out up a hill at Spur 408 and Interstate 20 in southern Dallas County. They say they helped out too many trucks to count. What'd you do with it, dingy? Here.
All you'd have to do is put hot salt on the road and let it soak for about 10 minutes.
Well, let me tell you.
And
this
that
one
would help
thing
them
that,
out.
Yeah. Here's a dually that's right there, but, you know, in this video, and I'm not going to play the video, so, but, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
it does go uphill there.
Yeah. It's good that they were helping out and stuff like that, but it's like, really?
What? What's your problem? You see this? Sit in your pie hole.
Yeah, we're going to get out of here.
I'm going to say, that's what we were falling asleep on earlier.
Have a drink.
So.
Yeah.
So what else has been up, Blue?
How's the milk with a smile?
Not much. My day's off. I've been doing some home improving at a friend's house. Otherwise, just driving.
Huh.
Own this baby now.
That's good.
Is that good?
Yeah. I got to get the fat tires off of it because I slide all over the place.
Oh, I bet.
I've already gone through a container of hot salt this year, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm keeping busy. I haven't gone anywhere. Not since COVID. I haven't. When I'm down, I've just stayed in the Kansas area.
I see you.
But what all you can do up to? Although I do have to fix my Wabasco heater, and just got the kit in the mail the other day.
Oh,
so I'm looking forward to doing that.
Me, you know, nothing. We've just been, you know, here at the house mostly when Greg's home and get the little heathen once in a while. Well, I can't even say once in a while. We have him 3 or 4 days a week.
So have you guys got a Wabasco heater in your truck?
No.
Okay.
No, my dad had one in his old red truck he had. And he loved it.
Oh, yeah, I love it. runs off the, I've got an APU. It can turn on once in a while when it needs to, and otherwise, and it can blow you out of the system. But mine's not working right now, so I got a replacement kit. Just the glow plug tool, gaskets.
Really?
I'm hoping by Friday I can watch enough videos to figure out how to get it working.
It shouldn't be that hard, you wouldn't think, but fixing her
heater.
No,
I don't think so.
Oh, Greg said you can rebuild them because Robbie rebuilt his, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do is rebuild it.
Yeah.
And then I got to have a pick to scrape out the soot or whatever on the exhaust in.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it's cheaper to get the rebuild kit for $40 than to replace it for $1,800.
Oh, yeah. See, when you do that, you should do videos and send me videos.
Do videos of
You rebuilding
doing
it?
My fixing. Ah, okay.
Yeah. That's what we're about. Remember.
Yeah, and then my next oil change, I'm getting a shutoff valve put on the bottom of the pan, so I can do my own oil changes.
Yeah, Dad has one.
A friend burns the oil at his ranch, so
yeah,
I can save gallon jugs.
Oh, yeah.
He'll take it and reuse it.
What'd you do? Oh, you think it's funny, don't you? Uh-huh. I forgot how much fun it was to have a little one around, especially when they started, discovering everything, like his toes. And if he doesn't want something on his pipe, he just throws it on the floor.
Ah.
Yeah. If you give him something to eat and he doesn't like it, he spits it all over you.
You didn't like Cheerios?
He's too young for Cheerios yet.
Ah.
Yeah, we have a little bit more time before he can do Cheerios.
How about those gross chewing cookie things?
Yeah, he'll be able to do those, but right now he's only 5 months, so. Hey, Greg.
What?
You want to come get little Miss off the table? I can't reach her this time. She's getting bold. She's going to start getting the newspaper.
Hey. Yeah,
so what's with this collecting more cats?
I know, right? This one showed up.
Do you still have
here.
The outside heated castle?
Yep. We do. There's only two
cats
in there
now. So how many strays are you feeding now?
Well, she was the only one that we were feeding outside, but she was so docile. I seen her. I went down to talk to the neighbor the one day, and when Michelle pulled in her driveway, this cat took off running because I call her Little Miss. She's a little tortoise calico, cute as a button. But as soon as she seen Michelle pull in, she took off. She was in their garbage pulling out a pizza crust to eat. So, the cat was starving. So then I went and, of course, started putting food out for her when she'd come up and feed her, and she ate like it was going out of style. And then when it started getting cold, getting real cold, we decided, we'll bring her in and see how she does. And for the longest time, she was out in the garage because I kept saying I wasn't bringing her in the house. I'll leave her in the garage, and that way she'll stay warm, and then I'll put her out when it warms back up some. Next thing Greg's like, open the door, let her see how she does. Well, it took her a while. She's finally got to where she will, be around the other dogs and the cats. So she was, every time she seen him, she'd growl and hiss at him, and now she don't do that. They may hiss at her, but she don't really hiss at them unless they do it first. So.
So how many dogs do you have?
We're down to just 3 now.
Oh.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
and
we
how many cats?
oh. Whoa. We got 12 cats. Yes.
And they're not cheaper by the dozen either.
And Greg said they're not cheaper by the dozen either.
No, wow. I would imagine not.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's always one of those things, we never want to see any animal starve or, you know, so we're always having to make sure we take care of them. And like little Miss over here, she always wants out, you know, usually in the evenings when she's really pushing to go out. And then finally I decided, nope. And she's sitting in the window now. And she'd sit in there and just start complaining and just nonstop meowing and wouldn't shut up. She has now finally quit that, so that's a good thing.
No kidding.
There was a burp. Thank you. So, but yeah.
So, being a female driver.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be interviewed about women in trucking from RTI.
Oh.
Yeah, and they're kind of curious how things are handled. What would be one of your complaints as a female in trucking? I've got only one major one, and that's the repairs. The shops think you're stupid.
There's a lot of complaints in trucking, but it's not specified for women or men. It's just, you know, trucking in general. I can't say.
Right.
I mean, when I first started driving, it was, you know, there was a lot of...
Women were far and few.
Yeah. I mean, now everywhere you turn around, you see one.
Uh-huh.
So it was a little different for me back then, but I also was doing steel, and most women didn't do steel. Most of them all did dry van. So, complaints in trucking for women, I can't complain about nothing. I mean,
can't complain about anything except for, like I say, shop work. And I think mainly RTI shops.
Yeah, well, no, it's probably just a little bit of everybody because they figure, well, you know, they don't know, but you know because you drive that truck every day. So you know if something's wrong.
Right. So I know I have a short someplace in my taillights because I can turn my truck off, pull the key out, turn my lights off, and I still have taillights on and taillights on in the trailer. Where would the short be? In the taillights or in the pigtail?
What's going on?
Or both.
When she shuts her truck off, shuts her lights off and everything else, she still has taillights on the truck and taillights on the trailer. So she
does it happen all the time.
Taillights. Brake lights or taillights? You sure it's taillights and not the brake lights?
Okay, which ones? The inside ones are the brake lights, aren't they?
I think, yeah.
So
it's
the brake lights.
It's probably
the brake lights.
Yeah, your brake light switch is sticking. When it Greg says when it does that, reach down and pull your brake pedal up.
Yeah, hit the brake pedal or whatever, push it, let it back up. Yeah, it sounds like brake light, brake switch on there. You know, the brake pedal, the valve or something sticks down there. Cord.
Yeah, he says it sounds like the valve or something down on the floor is sticking. Because his did it, he had to replace it. So it might not be a short. It might be the valve down there, the switch. Under the brake pedal.
Okay. Good to know. I'll check it out. Because when I parked and let the dogs out, because I had to have a half-hour break before I fueled. And I had my lights off, and the brake lights were on.
Yeah.
on the trailer and on the tractor. Yeah. If you own your own truck, you got to learn to fix your own truck.
You're right.
All right, Bob, set you back up there.
You're getting heavy, Chunk Monster. Yep. No, I said sit there. Whew, I was sitting here holding him a little bit to get him the burp after he, you know, got woke back up again. He's getting heavy. But. All right, I lost my glasses. Can't even see what time it is. Okay.
Yeah, 1932 Central.
Yep. I took my glasses off, then I can't see anything up close, so. But I... Oh. Crappy. Oh, let's see if we can find something else here. All right. All right, here's something that happened on the 27th of January. A truck clipped a small plane during emergency landing on a Texas highway. Small plane hit tractor trailer during emergency highway landing. A small plane struck a tractor trailer last weekend while making an emergency landing on the highway north of Houston. The Texas Department of Public Safety spokesman said the plane apparently lost power as it approached the highway. Investigators of the Federal Aviation Administration said in a statement that the pilot of a single-engine Breech M35 reported engine problems and made an emergency landing on the Highway 99 near Tumble, Texas, around 11:30 a.m. local time Sunday, January 22nd. The aircraft clipped a tractor or a trailer, hit a concrete barrier, and caught fire after landing. Only the pilot was on board. Tumball is located about 33 miles northwest of Houston. Oh, okay. Neither the pilot nor the trucker was injured in the collision, and neither was identified. So that's good. I mean, I'm glad to see that nobody was hurt in the process.
True.
Because it could have been a lot worse for both of them.
No kidding.
Really? Why are you trying to cover your face with my hands? Gigi needs her hands.
So it sounds like fighting between a truck and an airplane, it's a tie.
Yeah. What'd you do? Oh, you think that's funny now, huh? Waylon has discovered when he pops his pacifier out of his mouth, it makes a noise. So he likes to keep doing that. He's a crazy child. You all right? Okay. Oh, let's see. Okay, here. Okay, most of you guys all know about these stupid trailers that's got the side skirts on them. We own one that's got them on it. But they are the NHTSA begins process for possible trailer side under ride guard rulemaking. So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has started the process for a potential proposal to require side under ride guards on newly manufactured trailers. The agency on Friday sent an advance notice to proposed rulemaking to the White House Office of Management and Budgeting, which must approve the notice before it is published in the Federal Registry.
So mandatory skirting?
Yeah, well, like Greg said, he says it's to keep people from driving under it, you know, under your trailers.
But that skirt, they go to them skirts, not under it.
Yeah, but it makes it worse on windy days.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're looking to do, is to make a, you know, brackets or whatever, you know, the underride guards, kind of like the, you know, deer guards type thing.
Right.
So, but, yeah. So we know it's not going to be fixing the whole issue, because they're still going to drive under, because they're on new trailers. It's not on a lot of these older ones that's out here. And are they going to put them on the dry van, or just the dry vans? Or are they going to put them on the, you know, flatbeds too?
Can't get under a flatbed.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know.
The way I look at it is, the stupid son of a bitch want to drive underneath the damn trailer, they shouldn't have a bar. They should do that. That case, just let them do it.
Right.
Stupidity, take care of it.
Yeah, so they're looking into, let's see. It goes on to say that NHTSA said that the ANPRM will respond in part to the September 2013 petition for rulemaking to start studies and rulemakings around side underride guards. The rulemaking would also respond to a requirement in the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure law. Highway funding measures that called the additional research into side underride guards to assess their effectiveness, feasibility, costs, and benefits. Legislation seeking to require side underride guards on trailers has previously been introduced in Congress, but the bills have not gained any traction. Such bills were generally opposed by trucking groups, including the American Trucking Association and OIDA, but were supported by safety groups and law enforcement. Testing conducted in 2017 by the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety showed the underride guards mounted to the side of a trailer provided similar safety benefits as rear-mounted guards. The OMB has 90 days by federal law to approve or deny the ANPRM. Once OMB clears it, NHTSA will be free to publish it in the Federal Registry. Man, that was a lot of, you know, syllables. But, yeah, I don't see where they're going to make it any better.
I don't care for the skirting on them.
Some of our trailers
have the big plastic piece. It looks like somebody took a boat and put it upside down underneath for aerodynamic.
Right.
And I, you know, they're kind of in the way when you're moving your tandems, because they have them so far back.
Right.
And then we have other pieces that are in the very back by the DOT bumper. And then right in the middle of the trailer, but I don't think those are going to be big enough to be like the full skirting. The full skirting is real pain, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And my route, I get a lot of different winds from the north, south, whatever. And so I don't like them.
Okay, I'm going to put Greg on for a minute to talk to you, because I got to go change a stinky diaper.
So what's the problem with the skirts?
The wind catches them, blows you around more.
Well, no, I've never had much trouble with mine.
And, well, the skirtings we have their first time they put them up, they just wave in the wind. So they put these other brackets on, and they're not very sturdy.
Huh.
A lot of times when they start waving in the wind, you just got to start breaking them off.
Right. Mine ain't.
Otherwise,
mine was
they'll take out your sidelight.
when I got my utility, it had them on there when I got it, and I haven't touched them, haven't had any problem with them. They wiggle, you know, a little bit when the wind catches them a little bit. You see them ripple just a little bit, but not real bad. I don't pay attention to them. I know they claim it keeps the spray and the water and the snow and everything out underneath of it. Yeah, BS. Yeah, I took mine and pulled it my last winter. I was up in Wisconsin and Minnesota and stuff running around for Hurley up there. I come down out of there. I had enough snow packed up in there underneath them cross members and up inside underneath of them skirts. They don't keep nothing out of there.
Uh-uh.
All that things is on there for is looks.
Yep. Well, California brought them into effect originally because motorcycles can go right between traffic. And that was to keep them from sliding under the air, from pulling them under. California is one that called for the skirting originally.
Yeah, what was it, Oregon or one of them out there that started that crap with the wide base single or the super singles too, tires.
Oh, I haven't heard about that. I got super singles on mine, and I can't wait to get rid of them. It was one of the western states
out there, a couple of the western states out there, northwest or whatever, that tried to get it. They tried to get it mandatory to where they wanted the super singles, on tires. They wanted the law where everybody had to run them. Instead of running duals, just run one tire. Super singles and wide base and everybody that didn't fly. They that blowed over real quick.
No, you get on those back roads and you have a flat tire. Yeah, you're stranded and you've just blocked the highway.
Yeah, I don't want nothing to do with them.
I did
take my truck and changed them instead of having because I got Low Pro 22 drive tires and steers on mine now because pulling that van. I took my Low Pro 24s off, but I was having trouble with the roads being so damn rough with all these holes and stuff. I kept breaking belts in my steer tires. So I solved that problem too. I went and put the 315 80, them big float tires, a 315 80 22.5 rib tire goes on my, that's what I got on my steers now. So instead of an 11-inch wide tire now, mine's about 14 inches wide.
Ah.
Well, I put the big float tires like they run on front.
So you put the super single on the steer.
The super single won't fit, but the wide base, basically what I got is a wide base single. It's basically is what it is. You remember them ones that Chris and Jessica had on the front of their Kenworth? You probably don't remember it. But anyhow, them big wide tires like the dump trucks and stuff run. Mine ain't quite as wide as some of them, but they're real close. But they're wider than a regular tire. They're a couple inches wider than a regular tire, but they're that 315 ADR is the same height. It's a 22.5, but it's the same height as an 11R24. It's the same height as a tall 24 inch. But I put them on there, man. It made a big difference in the ride. You hit them bridges and the expansion joints and the bridges and stuff. Now it just floats across them. Most of the holes, the front end, you don't even feel it. It rolls across them. You don't even feel it. Now the drives, you still feel that one a bit. But, yeah, it made a big difference in it. And it wasn't but like $100 more per tire than what a steer premium steer is. So.
Well, that's still worth it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about trying to get them and just run them all the way around. Put all my drives for everything.
How much weight would that add, though?
Yeah, it'd add a little bit of weight, but at my point in the game, what matters? I'm throwing almost 34,000 empty anyhow. My truck with my flatbed's 33, about 33, 33.5, 33, somewhere right in there. And that drive in, I'm 200 pounds heavier with that 53-foot drive in than what I am with my 45-foot Conestoga.
Wow.
That flatbed's heavy. It's all aluminum, but it's heavy. It's got extra cross members stuff up in there for the coil package. Back 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the drive bands, the cross members aren't that strong.
Yeah, well,
look
2 weeks ago, I went out there.
Look at all the wrecks here lately. They're splitting in the middle.
Yep. Well, that's the way they're loading them. These guys seem to think, and these shippers stuff seems to think you can take all that weight and pile it right down the middle of the trailer, right in the middle of the trailers. You can't do that. That flatbed, you can do that. The drive vans won't take it. I took one out 2 weeks ago. Marie wanted me to go over to Lima, pick up a load in Lima, Ohio, a roll, mill roll, and take it out to Gary, out there at U.S. Steel Gary. So I went over that morning. She says, two rolls, 50,000. I said, okay. I got over there, and that guy says, right here's your roll. He said, I said, thought it was two for 50. He said, no, that's the only thing I got going. That's okay. So I figured, well, it's one roll for 50. I didn't like it, but I figured, okay. He set it on there. I chained it down. He came over and gave me my bills. I just throwed them in the truck and looked at them. I got ready, chained it down, closed my trailer up. I got in there, couldn't figure out why the truck wasn't there. I mean, it was airing up, but it was airing up slow, man. It took a long time to pick it up because the airbags was almost shoved clear down. 62,000 is what that roll weighed.
Whoa.
62,000 pounds. I was just...
Do you have three-axle tractor or four-axle tractor?
I got just a regular tractor, regular three-axle tractor, and five axles. All I got, a spread. I was 98,000 when I pulled out of the door. He pissed me off, and I didn't call her. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I took off to Gary. I took it out across there, no permit, no nothing. 98,000.
Holy crap. That's got to be hard on the truck.
Now, it took it. My truck don't care. It'll pull it. It don't matter. I hauled two yesterday. I took a load of firebrick out to Burns Harbor and dropped it off. It was only 27,000. And then I went down just right down below Burns Harbor to Chesterton, Indiana, a roll shop down there, and I picked up a roll there. It was 52,000. And she got me a permit when we run the pike. I ain't running paying $300 to run the toll road over across Indiana and Ohio to go over there. I took it straight across 30. It was 52,000. So I took it over and unloaded it. And then they took it, lifted it off, and put the old one right back on me, and it weighed the same thing. And I brought it right back over where I picked it up at, dropped it off Chesterton last night. And they put I think it was only 40,000 that I brought back today. I loaded it late last night. I pootered out 600 miles of log. That was enough yesterday. So I went to bed. Shoulder been hurting anyhow. So I went to bed out there at Grovertown, out there on 30 in Indiana. I was sneaking to about 10 o'clock. I delivered it. It was 40,000, but I brought it over. It paid us 52. She said, they're paying them as 52. I said, well, give me some more of them then. But we're getting ready to lease the drive van back on the BMAC up there where I'm at now because she's got a company up here in Darlington, right up here above us, that hauls them super sacks of carbon. And she was telling me that guy had a load the other day. He called her begging for a drive van, wondered to see if she could find him a drive van. He needed a drive van, and she didn't have one. I said, Marie, she said, well, I didn't even think about you and getting these on. I said, well, it will be. $7,000 to go out to Nebraska. From Darlington to out to Nebraska, $7,000. The only thing is, you get out there, what the hell are you going to get out there? If BMAC or somebody ain't got nothing, then I got to try to find a load coming back. Or deadhead. And I don't want deadhead from Nebraska.
That's a lot of deadhead.
Well, when I was with Hurley, I deadheaded from Kansas City twice. But that's like, what, 900 miles? 800? 900, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But when I was working for Hurley, we was putting anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 a week in the damn direct deposit into our account too. So So
right.
It didn't matter. Just put the fuel in it and go. The hell with it. You didn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Now, when they started telling me I was going to stay out a month at a time, and then I could come home for 4 days, and I had to go out for another month. I had to schedule my truck maintenance when I was off on my home time. And if I stayed home longer than 4 days, I had to make it up on the next trip out. Bullshit. They tell me I run the truck. I own the truck, not you.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I left. Did I do the right thing? I don't know. Sometimes I wonder. I mean, I did. But, you know, that was hard walking away from a job that, you know, $300,000, $400,000 a year. I think that's...
Yeah, I like going about 600, 650 out and then back.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I've been doing for the last, what, 3-4 years?
Huh. Shit. That's an average day for me, about 600 miles.
Yeah,
I leave here at 500.
Technically,
it's right at 500. You're just a hair over from me. When I leave here, by the time I run around here and get loaded and then go out to Gary or Burns Harbor, that's right at anywhere from 500 to 600.
Yeah.
So it's a good day's work by the time you load and chain everything down and whatever, and then you drive out there, and then a lot of the places out there we go to, the roll shops are 24 hours, so when we get there, they'll unload it when you get there. So, cycle load, I got load either tomorrow or Friday.
We got dropping hooks.
I got load either tomorrow or Friday. I got load a roll or two rolls down here in Washington, PA, and they're going up to Butler, Indiana, so that's only 300 miles or so, but I got to go up there. And they'll unload the new one, and then put the old one back on me, and I got to bring it back over to Canton and drop it off. So, you know, and it's 24 hours up here at that roll shop, because most of the roll shops where they roll the steel out, they're waiting to see you. You know, steel, you know, flatbed steel haulers now, they if you pull a flatbed and haul coils and stuff, they treat you like you're a piece of trash. You know, it's like you go in there, it's like, what do you want? Go set your truck. We'll get to you when you get time. No, not with it. Not this stuff I'm hauling for Marie, these rolls and stuff. Man, I love hauling them because they're glad to see you. When you get there, you've got something they need. You know, they need it because without them rolls, they're not making those, they're not rolling those steel out, no coils.
Ah.
So they're glad to get them because, yeah. But one of them rolls could be, you know, $500,000.
Wow.
Hey, Greg.
How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good, man. You say you got to go to Nebraska. Is that Fairbury, Nebraska you're going to?
I don't know where. I don't even know when it's going now. A guy called Marie here the other day. My dispatcher called her, and he was looking for a drive van, and she didn't have none. Well, she didn't realize
that
I had mine, but I ain't got it leased on, but it's just sitting up here on the hill. But it's some kind of it's Aqua. Super sacks of carbon going out there to a water treatment place or something where they
water,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're making like Brita filters or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's water filtration.
Well, it's
just carbon, super sacks of carbon.
Fairbury has
When they haul those carbon off your trailer, I've hauled
yeah.
it. And they
yeah.
say, do you need us to clean the trailer? Say yes. Because you have 3 inches of that carbon on the floor of your trailer.
Nah, this
you
stuff
won't
here ain't
sweep
too
it
bad.
Out. You will shovel it out.
Nah, this company we haul for, I hauled some of that stuff when they moved from their plant up here in Darlington over down. They moved some stuff back to Rochester, back and forth to Rochester, PA. I hauled it there. Actually, they're pretty good about packing their stuff. They don't leak too much. You make it a little bit, but not a whole lot. But I got a method to that. You just carry a leaf blower with you. I take the steel leaf blower with me. If I got to clean the trailer, I'll clean it all right. I'll pull out their parking lot and fire it steel up. I'll clean it. I'll blow it right out in their parking lot. Greg don't sweep nothing.
No, I got a blower too. But, yeah. At the time, I didn't have a blower. Didn't even notice it because it's all black. And when I got to my next place, I thought, oh, I should check this. 2 inches of sediment.
I had a load that I hauled one time. I forget even who I was with. Now, it was that with this trailer, but it was silica dust. It was
yep.
like baby powder. It was brown, and it was like baby powder. It was in big metal containers. And when they took that crap, they put it in there. I forget even where I loaded it now, but.
When I hauled tires, I had that kind of stuff. Because
wow.
they put powder over all the tire sidewalls and stuff like
yeah.
that when you haul tire pieces.
Yeah, so they don't stick together.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you got a bunch of that to get out of the trailer.
Yeah. I ain't sweeping. I ain't unloading nothing. I ain't sweeping nothing. I just blow it out their parking lot and be done with it. I ain't a forklift. So what you been up to, Jeff?
I've been running me all over. I had a load just last night. That first time it's ever happened to me. You get to the shipper and they said, yep, it's ready to take it. Signs the paperwork, but the broker won't let me leave. And I was so fired up, pissed off. And then this morning, they wouldn't let me go until 8 o'clock this morning. I went in at 8 o'clock. Well, the reason was we had to get more parts put on the doors because it was going to Thermo King Corporate. And I said, well, why couldn't somebody just communicate that to me? Why do I have to be kept in the dark until now?
Yeah. Who's going to
pay
me for sitting here all night when I was scheduled to pick it up?
I was scheduled to 8 o'clock this morning to pick it up, but I went in early to see if it was done. Oh, yeah, it's done. Take it. And I'm glad I didn't because there had been a lot of ugly people about it. But.
Right.
But anyway, it was a talking up is learning experience, I guess. So.
Yeah.
Now I'm pulling a polar home, going home. I got a doctor's appointment at Mayo Clinic next Tuesday. So.
Oh.
Anyway, no, I've been lucky. I've been hitting the roads dry and ice free, so I've been lucky.
Really?
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Donnie.
I know. Lately, it has been.
Our buddy Donnie, he went out and took a load out to Chandler, Arizona, out there by Robbie. He took a load out to Chandler delivered out there last Friday out in Arizona, and he's been sitting out there since last Friday. Well, yesterday evening he was leaving there. They paid him. They couldn't find him nothing out there, so they paid him $1,200 to deadhead up to Dallas or Fort Worth,
damn.
Somewhere right there between
damn.
Fort Worth and Dallas, to pick up some stuff for Lockheed Martin going over to Johnstown. Okay. So I bet he's having
a drift out here, man.
Huh?
I just passed a drift beside me that was up to the. Halfway up my passenger window. That's a big ass drift.
Where the hell you at?
Redwood Falls, Minnesota.
That's a good place. A good place to stay out of then.
Well, the roads are dry, so I'm good.
Yeah. Now, I was up there with Hurley last year before I was up there, man. They kept me up there. It seemed like Wisconsin, Minnesota. I couldn't get out of that place that year. Obviously, that's another damn reason I left them. Summertime, you never got up there, man. So it was wintertime come, it seemed like every damn load day, the automotive stuff they had to come out of Wisconsin or Minnesota. Greg got it. I said, no.
It's cool seeing all these snowmobiles fly around, though.
It's like everybody come out of chain walls and stuff. It's like Marie. She said, well, if you go out to Nebraska now, she said, not in there in that damn snow. She said, you'd have to take chains. You'd have chains. You know, have to have chains. I said, that's fine. I throw chains on the truck. I said, I carry them on there. I said, but I ain't using them. I said, if I got to get out and put chains on the truck, I said, I'll just go to bed and wait till spring. Because I said, I ain't throwing iron. I'll tell you now, them days are over. Drake quit that a long time ago. As a matter of fact, the only time I've ever put chains on a truck was just to get out of a parking lot so I could get home. As soon as I got to where I wasn't stuck, I pulled them off, throwed them inside, and I've never done it again. 38 years.
I don't carry. I don't carry chains. I carry snow socks.
Yeah.
Do those really work?
Oh, they work awesome. They work really good.
How long do they last?
They'll last a long time until you run on dry pavement with them. They'll last about 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I didn't figure that nylon would take that very long. Kevlar.
The right weight.
Right.
I've used them to get unstuck, and that's about it. I won't throw them on or go.
What do you do? Just
bad enough
down
where I got to run
with
chains, I'll just shut down.
How's it going, Jeff? Just hook them down over the top of the tire, like down around the sides, and then pull forward and stretch them back up over the other side?
Yep, they self-center.
That's what I figured. I've seen them
after guys. I've used them to get unstuck, and that's about it. Pulling away uphill on a dock on a snow, I've used them, and then on icy parking lots.
Huh.
Where I got a trailer froze down to the ground, I could bust it out that way.
Right. Huh.
How you been? You just sound like you're busier than hell, too. Good.
Yeah, well, I was this week. Last week, I done one round out there and back last week. And then this week, I went out there, took a load out, delivered it yesterday morning early, and then I run ahead, like I was telling Lou. I run that 52,000 roll. I run one of the big mill rolls from right there below Gary Chesterton out there off 49. I run one from there over to Ottawa, Ohio, over by Lima, dropped it off, unloaded it, and they put the old one back on me, and I took it right back over. They unloaded it, and they throwed another one on me for 40,000 coming over here to Niles up here to Youngstown. So time I loaded it off, or got everything done yesterday, I got back over there and got reloaded with this one. I had right at 600 miles, and I'm done. My shoulder's been hurting.
Yeah, I heard you did it.
Trouble with shoulders and
90,
stuff.
90,000.
Huh?
90,000 pound, you're damn lucky you didn't get roadside scaled.
I was only 85.6 yesterday, both out and back. Now, 2 weeks ago, I took that 62. I was 98,000.
Yeah, that one there.
Yeah.
You would have got caught that way. That would have been a major fine.
No, a major fine. Fine ain't the problem. Anything in Ohio, anything over 90,000, well, just about anywhere, but I know in Ohio, anything over 90,000 is a felony without a permit.
No shit? Oh, hell.
Yep.
You're a gusty man.
You get caught. Jeff, I did that. I've done that for so many years. That outlaw shit for so many years, I don't even think anything of it now other than, you know, I worry about the trailer. My trailer's getting old. It's a 95, you know. It's never been cracked, never been broke, never been welded, but it's, you know, hey, 20-some years, been a lot of loads put across the deck of that thing. And you take and set,
you set
a 62,000-pound piece, chunk iron, and 10-foot, you know, 10-foot or 12-foot of that trailer right smack over the middle light. That's a lot of weight bouncing right there over that bridge, you know?
Thank you. Enough to break the camel's back right there.
Right. And then this time of the year especially, because what happens when metal and stuff gets cold? It breaks. It gets brittle.
Brittle.
So now it's been single digits out here all day yesterday. It was down to single digits, and then with the wind chills, it was down in the negatives. And now you got, you know, 52,000 sitting back there bouncing on that aluminum. That's what I think about. When things get cold, that's when they break. You know, when it's hot out, you know, metal, you know, it'll flex and bend and spring a little bit. But when it gets cold, it's like a piece of glass. Everything wants to just, it won't bend, it breaks.
Yep.
But now, as far as weight, I said she ordered the permits for me, but the permit was $230, and that pissed me off because the way they permitted it, they routed it on the permit up across the Indiana Toll Road and across the Ohio Pike over to almost the Toledo and then dropped me down. Well, the tolls would have been almost $300 or better. Yeah, would have been. Been over $300 for just the tolls. And then with 200, $230 for the permit, you know, there you are. You're,
well, who pays the tolls? You gotta pay the tolls?
Yeah, I had to pay them. I had to pay for the permit, so there's $600 or $700 right off the top of the you know, the loads. No, I mean, the loads paid good, but time you start taking money like that off, there ain't much meat on the bone at the end of the day. No, I'm in this to make money, not give it back to the state.
You're right.
Man, no kidding.
So I just put it on there, and I took it up. I run up the street.
You don't run a best pass, do you?
No, I don't want one. We looked into it, but for me, it's not a good deal. Because when they start timing you, when that starts, you know, no. But that paper log, it'll screw me.
Yeah.
Right, well, paper log, yeah. ELD, yeah. It don't matter, you know, and
right.
I get 50% off all tolls, so.
Right, I don't run that many toll roads. You know, where
see,
we
I run tolls across. Going to Topeka all the time, so the company puts pass in. ELD, yeah.
Yeah, I don't, where we're at over here, what
yeah,
I do.
It was Hurley, and it was nice.
Yeah, I had, no, I don't, wasn't with Hurley. Ace.
Well, you had one with Hurley.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, I did have the easy pass, or pre-pass. Easy pass. Well, yeah, easy pass for the tolls. Didn't have the pre-pass, but it had the easy pass with Hurley. Yeah, it was, yeah, I did. I did have it because we did tolls. But, yeah, it wasn't bad, but you had to watch that the same way. You had to log it. You had to watch your time when you got on the toll road. When you got off, you had to make sure you could log it on paper. You had to mark that tire or have that log. You know, that time had to match on the paper log because when they got the printout for the toll road, it had to match.
Yep.
That's why I love my ELD.
I hate them things. I just, ain't no way. I just can't do that. I like the freedom to be able to go when I want to go, not have to wait around until it says I can go.
Yeah, you're too big a renegade.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, I've been like, that's what Donnie and Robbie was talking about one night on the show, you know, with Ed. I say, you know, I've done it so many years. So I was talking, someone else was I talking to tonight? Oh, it was, can't think now.
Well, you only talk to so many, so.
Whoever it was, you know, it's like years ago, we were running them old Max cab over, and that was for, you know, that's, well, 38 years ago, man, before they had the interstates in. A lot of the interstates wasn't even done. We was running California out of this area. We'd all meet at the mill. I maybe shouldn't say this on the radio. Well, ain't nobody listening anyhow. It's already off. But we'd go to the mill. We'd go to the mill and put a big load of iron on the trailer. That wasn't nothing but, you know, take off, you know, 70,000-80,000 on the deck. On the deck of a flatbed. Six or eight of us would meet down at the local watering hole right there around the mill somewhere. There was always a bar around there close. We'd all meet there in the parking lot. Dad always had big lots, park the trucks. We'd go in there, sit down, have two or three beers, couple shots of whiskey, wash a couple pills down our neck and jump in the trucks and take off for California.
Yeah.
About 2 days, 2.5 days, be out in California, unload, reload, somewhere out there, and do the same thing again. Couple pills, chase them down, three or four beers, a couple shots, and take off and head back this way again.
Wow.
Did that for a long time, and never had all the wrecks, never had any problem, just, you know, occasional speeding ticket. I had a speeding ticket for a long time. I got out there in the desert, man. I got it at 124 mile an hour. I don't know whatever happened to it. Yeah, that cop was not impressed that night.
Ah.
really wasn't impressed. I kept seeing the light out there coming at me way off in the distance, and I'd see the light, and then I wouldn't see it. Then I'd see it, I wouldn't see it. I thought, well, it was full moon out, stars, full moon, nice calm night. I'm running out through there, just wide open, me and a couple bull racks. Well, they got off, and I had to keep going. So they got off to go to a feedlot or something. I kept going. I'm going out through there, and it's light. I kept seeing this light, and then I wouldn't see it. I'd see it, I wouldn't see it. Well, this went on for about probably 45 minutes or an hour. And then all of a sudden,
wow,
that light got real bright when it passed me. Boom! Because I was running out across there with my lights out. Cops is out there. If they can't see you, they don't know who you are. So you shut the lights out and go across there just as hard as that truck will run, just run in the moonlight. You can see the road. Shut your lights out. Go. And that's what I was doing. Yeah. That light I kept seeing because of them little humps in the road, you know, them little rises in the road. You go up, you drop down them little low spots, and then you just, the little just whoop-de-doos out there. Yeah.
What do you mean the
dogs do, Missy? I come out across there, and that light come up, and I come up. And every time he told me when he stopped me, I said, as soon as I passed him, I passed him wide open. Everything that truck could run. Then he turned around, and he run that car as hard as it had run, too, until he caught me. I pulled over, and he said, you know how fast you was going? I said, I got no idea, but as fast as it had run. He said, 124 mile an hour. He said, if I write you up, he said, the judge ain't never going to believe this. I said, well, you got me, you got me. He said, why didn't you have your lights on? I said, because I didn't figure if I had my lights on, I didn't figure if I couldn't see you, you couldn't see me. He said, well, it didn't work.
Ah.
But anyhow, I mean, he was pissed when he stopped me, but he finally, he kind of lightened up a little bit. He chuckled a little bit before it was over with. He said, you know, seriously, he said, if I write you up, he said, they ain't never going to believe this in court. He said, truck come across here that fast. But he wrote me a warning on the speed, and I think the ticket was like 50, if I remember right, it was like $55. So that was a lot of money back then. $55
yep.
for excessive fuel consumption.
Really?
That's what he wrote me for. Excessive fuel consumption. I was tickling like 50-some dollars, and he gave me a warning on the speed. And it didn't say how fast.
Wow.
It said just speed, warning. That's all it said. He
wow.
said, now, he said, I'm telling you now, slow this son of a bitch down. I said, yes, sir. But, yeah,
yep,
every
sir.
Time he come up,
see
every
ya.
Time, when I seen his light, every time I seen that light, he was on top of one of them little, he was coming out across there, and he was coming up over one of them little knobs, you know, how that road just rolls out through there, you know?
Yeah.
And every time he'd come up through there, he was getting a reading on the radar gun, but he couldn't figure out why. He said radar gun kept going nuts. Every time he'd get top of one of them hills, that radar gun just go nuts. Yeah, that radar gun was hitting me, but he couldn't see me because I didn't have my lights on until he passed me, and then he found out what it was. But that every time, he said that radar gun was hitting me. Every time he'd hit one of them hills, he said he couldn't figure out what was going on until he passed me. He was a nice guy, but he wasn't happy with me when he first stopped me. But, yeah, them days are all gone. Now,
Now
the speed limit's out here is 70 mile an hour. And I guarantee you, pull my truck up, put a plug it in, whatever. 63 to 65 mile an hour is about as fast as I drive anymore. I run about 70 coming home today, 70, 71. Oh, I was living on the edge today. I thought, you know, what the hell? But I was trying to get home. I was tired, didn't feel good, so. But if I start running that fast, my fuel mileage drops off to nothing. I'd stay at 65 mile an hour, but I get about six. Loaded, I can get about 6.5, 6.8. But if I start running, the harder I run, the lower it gets. So I'm getting ready to re-ratio mine as soon as the weather gets better. I got 342s up there on the hill. I'm going to change the rear end gears. Matter of fact, we got a whole cutoff up there. It's got the gears in. I'm thinking about just cutting my frame and stretching it about another 3 foot, 4 foot, stretching my truck a little bit longer. but I ain't decided yet.
That'll add more weight.
Yeah.
Nah, it don't matter. I'm at the point now I got, I don't know. I ain't going, how much longer am I going to be driving? You know? I'm going to leave it at all you young guys, you young kids.
Right.
Lou don't want to quit, and I'm getting older now. I don't want to do it no more. She don't want to quit, and I don't want a truck.
Can't blame you.
I sure as hell don't want to be out here.
The drivers are getting kind of dumb. A friend of mine was in our terminal lot the other day, and this guy gets out of the truck, and he goes, "This old equipment. I can't believe this company has such old equipment." And she looks at him and is like, "What the hell you mean?" And he goes, "I need to move to tandems, and there's, you know, it's not air move." And she goes over and looks, and she's like, "Well, you got to pull the handle." Because he couldn't figure it out.
Huh.
He had to pull the handle to move the tandem, and he couldn't figure it out. And she goes, "Out of curiosity, how long you been driving?" "8 years." She goes, "Well, do you have a hammer?" He goes, "No, my hammer's at home. Why the hell do I need a hammer in the truck?" What kind of truck driver doesn't have a hammer in the truck?
You got them old tandems, like, or them old sliding tandems with the handle on. You better have a hammer. Because you're going to end up have to beat them things then sooner or later.
I was gobsmacked, man. I couldn't believe it.
Nah, we was talking about that one night. I said, you know, talking about the driver's mentality of these new drivers and everything, and, you know, training and everything. I said, it's real simple. I said, we can get the rates up real easy. I said, get rid of about half of these new drivers and these foreigners and stuff that's out here. I said, trucking would be back good again. I told Ed and them, I said, it'd be real simple to do, too. He said, how's that? I said, just put manual transmissions back in all of them and throw everybody a paper logbook and tell them there. Take them 87,000 IRS agents that they wanted to hire instead of hiring them. For IRS agents, hire 87,000 of them, make them DOT, turn them loose on the roads. I'll go out there and start checking logbook stuff now. Half of the 90% of these people out here that's out here driving truck now, I'll guarantee you, I'll say a quarter of them now can't drive a manual transmission, and I'll say that probably half of them that's out here right now couldn't fill out a paper logbook if their life depended on it.
I bet that's true.
So if you do that and make them do it, you know damn well they're going to screw it up. More money for the state, then they'll get pissed off and quit, go find something else to do, make freight rates go up.
There you go.
See?
I know there are some stupid drivers out there. I picked up a new trailer the other day, and this camel jockey came up to the guard shack. He says, something's wrong with this trailer. The back tires are sliding. They're not turning. And the guard says, well, you got to connect your air hoses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was at a truck stop for my 10-hour break, and I watched this guy come in, and, yeah, his trailer line, it wasn't even hooked up.
Yeah, how stupid.
I don't know better.
I see a lot of these company drivers, too, or company trucks. How stupid do you have to be for the company to have to put them plastic strips on the lug nuts that stick out so you can tell if your wheels are spinning? Or they'll take white paint or, you know, some color paint and spray paint a stripe on the damn tires so they can look back and see if the tires are turning.
Right?
Are you serious?
I picked up freight yesterday from this location and checked everything out. You know, when you take off, you do the squirrel so you can see both tires, all the tires are moving and everything,
right?
Well, I got a couple miles down the road, and all of a sudden my brakes are smoking. And I went, damn it. This happened to me last week, too. somebody goes in and tightens up the brakes, and they tighten them too tight, they start smoking. When you're doing a pre-trip,
why are they tightening them? Why are they adjusting brakes?
Oh, you know, you got to check. You got this company that goes through and checks out all the trailers and adjusting brakes is part of it, I guess. I don't know.
All I know is I'm on
the side of the road, and they think that my wheels are frozen. They don't believe me.
It's been a federal law since about 1990. I'm thinking 95, 96, somewhere in there. I forget what year it was.
Brakes.
It was mandatory that all the equipment had to have automatic slack adjusters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an automatic slack adjuster, if it is working, if it's serviced, greased properly, you know, it keeps maintenance, there is no reason to ever put a wrench on an automatic slack adjuster.
Right.
There's no reason for them brakes to be out of adjustment. If them brakes are out of adjustment, it's because there's something wrong. All right? But for them to just hook the airlines up to it and adjust them brakes and run them brakes up, adjust them brakes just for shits and giggles, I would fire somebody's ass. Somebody would be question and answer time. I've had my truck, now this is no shit, we've had that truck, what, 8 years now? 7 years? All right, the trailer, I've had it about 8 years, I know. Anyhow, the only time that I adjust or touch my slack adjusters is when I put new brakes on it, because you got to back them off to get the drums off.
Right.
And get the new brakes on. As soon as I put them on, I adjust them up. I tighten them up, tighten them clear up till they hit the drum. I back them off about a quarter to a half a turn, and I leave them.
Right.
If they're not adjusted enough, they will set themselves up where they like it, where they want to be. They will automatically adjust themselves. If they're working properly, they will adjust themselves. If they're going to check brakes, they need, instead of getting under there and just turning on them with a wrench just to be justifying their existence, let them hook the airlines up, have somebody hit the brakes or lock the brakes down, and go back there and measure the stroke on them. If the brake stroke is, you know, what is it? 2 1/4 or 2 1/2 or to 3 inch, depending on short stroke or long stroke. As long as they're within tolerance and they're you know, within the legal limit, leave them alone. I don't touch mine. I don't look at them. I don't touch them. I don't do it. I grease it. I look at it when I'm up under the grease, and when I grease it, I haven't greased my truck, and I can't tell you when. I take it in Speedco and sit there and watch them while they do it. You know, I pay them $29. They can walk around under a pit. I ain't got to crawl around up here in the rock and the mud and do it. I walk up and down the side of the truck and make sure they get every grease fitting, you know, but I let them do it. $29, let them do it. I don't have to crawl under it. Now, I'll go under it every once in a while, just up around the hill. I'll slide underneath of it, doing checking oil or something, changing oil. I'll look at everything, you know, just make sure ain't nothing loose, falling off, whatever. But to mess with a slack adjuster, Lou, if they're doing that, you need to bring that to somebody's attention in maintenance or something in the garage or in the shop. Them guys should not be turning on them slack adjusters. First of all, when you start turning them all the time and cranking on them slack adjusters, you'll mess them up.
Right.
Because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to. That's why they're called automatics. They're maintenance-free adjusters. If there's something wrong, if they're not adjusting up, or they're you know, then they got a bad slack adjuster. You need to change the adjuster, not just run it up. Not just adjust it, because if you tighten it up, it's just going to back off again. So if they're not within tolerance and there's something wrong, you got a mechanical issue somewhere. either a slack adjuster, a bad shoe, broken drum, bad maxi, something. And, you know, a brake chamber, something.
S-cams,
cams, cam bushings, something. Yeah, they shouldn't be adjusting nothing. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know who's checking the trailers on that particular lot, but it's like I'm two for two there now. Trip last week and this trip yesterday. And it's like I don't like sitting on the side of the road.
I know exactly what I do. First time I hit the side of the road, yeah, I'd call the shop. Is that what you did?
Yeah, I had to call breakdown.
Damn right.
And the first time, they sent a service truck in, and the guy goes, man, I'm sorry you had to sit here so long just to get your brakes adjusted. And it's like, why do I need to get these brakes adjusted? They are supposed to all be automatic.
Right.
And yeah,
they're all automatic.
I'm trying
to this new equipment anymore. I know I know for a fact. I almost guarantee it, I'd almost bet my life that RTI, at 95-98% of these companies out here, none of them has got a piece of equipment around anymore that's got manual adjusted brakes on it. Manual slack.
Oh, yeah.
They just don't have them. These older trailers is all gone now. The only ones you see
and we don't have older trailers. We lease trailers.
Right. The only ones that's got manual adjusters on them anymore is sitting out in a farmer's field somewhere for a storage unit.
Yep.
Because they're not on the road. Yeah,
So why are they getting underneath and manually changing that, adjusting that slack adjuster?
Yeah, I'd be talking to them in the shop. Tell them, you know, you need to find out who the hell is doing this stuff because they're adjusting brakes and they shouldn't, with them slag, them automatics, they should not have to touch them. If they're backed off, they don't just run them up. They need to find out why they're backing off. If you got a brake out of adjustment, then there's a reason that it's out. Either the slack adjuster's gummed up and it ain't working or whatever. I mean, in the last 10 years, well, since I've had this black truck and this classic and that trailer, my flatbed, I have changed one slack adjuster on that truck, and it was on the trailer, the right rear one. And it wasn't backing off, it was tightening up, and that shouldn't have been. I've never seen one tighten up. Usually they'll back off. You ain't got no brake on that wheel. But this one of mine, when you'd start down a hill and touch the brakes on it, they kept tightening up. You get to the bottom of the hill, it was smoking. And I couldn't figure out why. And I crawled underneath it, it'd be real tight. I backed it off and readjusted it. I was on my way to Chicago. I heard, well, I worked on a truck that week. I thought maybe I had a brain fart. Maybe I just didn't do something right. So I adjusted it up the way it's supposed to be, right there on the ramp, right up here by the house. I kept on going. I went out to Gary. I got out to Gary, and I hit the brakes out there going down one of them hills. Something out there in Mansfield started smoking again. I said, what the hell? So I let up. It quit. I went on out the rest area. I pulled in there, and the drum was warm. So I crawled under it. It was tight again. I adjusted it again. When I got out to Gary, that damn thing was tightened up again. Every time you touch the brakes, you get a puff of smoke. I said, okay. So I crawled up underneath of it out there in the parking lot, and it had tightened up again. I said, I can't have this. Well, I had, I couldn't do anything because that's got a weird spline on that slack adjuster or on that S-cam. So it's different than what it is on most of them because I got the heavy axles in this flat. So I crawled under there and backed the brake off. I backed that slack adjuster, that brake, and I caged the brake cam, the brakes. I put the cage bolt in it, tightened it up, and I just caged that one brake so it wouldn't work. Figure, hell, it's better than burning it up. I'll take my chances on getting caught with one brake caged on it, you know. It's coming back and forth across there at night like I run. I ain't worried about it. So I get home, And I got checked, and I said, there's got to be something wrong with that slack adjuster where the Paul was screwed up in it. So I took it off and took one down here to TRP and showed it to them, and we matched one up that had the right splines. I brought a new one home, got a new one. I think it was like $70 or something like that. I put that new cam on there, or that new slack adjuster on there. I ain't had a bit of problem with that truck since. I've changed one since I had this truck and trailer. And I've had this thing all over the place.
See, I just don't get that.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that we've been having a lot of trouble with. So I don't know who they got repairing or checking out or doing pre-trips on these trailers, but the brakes smoking, that's stupid.
Yeah, they're tightening them up too tight. That's exactly what it is. They're cranking them damn adjusters. Whoever's doing it, I got a good idea when they're tightening, when they're adjusting the brakes, instead of tightening them down till they hit the drum, you know, squeezing them down against the drum and then backing them off like I do a quarter or half a turn, they're cranking them down until they touch the drum and saying, okay, they're adjusted up. No, that's not the way you adjust brakes. You
right.
Tighten them down till they touch the drum, and then you back them off a quarter or a half, because when you hit the brake, that's the truck's job, is to shut the slack adjuster out and roll that S-cam and make contact with the drum. And whatever reason they've got for tightening them clear down against that drum, that's wrong. You don't do that. So whoever they got doing that needs to go to a class to learn, you know, if they're a mechanic or so-called mechanic, they should know that. Somebody
right.
needs to educate them, because it's going to cost RTI a bunch of money if they don't. Because them service trucks don't care. They're brutal.
They are brutal.
Yep.
And two trips in a row, man.
Yep.
That killed me time-wise.
That's what I'm saying.
If it wasn't
you need
for bad
roads,
I stayed in Lyman because of the bad roads and the fog. I had freezing fog out there, so I just parked. But I couldn't even make my run because I sat on the side of the damn road.
Huh. Yeah, you need to go in the shop and talk to somebody in the shop and tell them what's going on. It's happened twice, and the same damn thing both times. The brakes is too tight. Because two trailers, two different times, can't be the same. It's not a coincidence.
Right.
You know, that's being purposely done. Somebody's doing something wrong. What do you say, Jeff? Sounds like that to you, too.
I agree.
Well,
yeah,
and, you know,
how
and they say they're automatic slack adjusters, and they don't want the driver down there messing with the brakes because they're automatic. Well,
right.
You can't be driving down the road and having smoke.
That's what I'm saying. You shouldn't have to adjust them. If them automatic slack adjusters is working properly, and as new as that equipment is, trucks and trailers, it's going to be very, very rare for one of them to go bad. I'm not saying that one won't go bad once in a while. You get bad part and everything. But that's getting too frequent there, because there is no way that two different trailers, two different days, got the same problem.
Yep.
Somebody.
Well, I got to go in the office tomorrow morning. I'll run down to the shop and put my
They give you any shit. Give me my phone number. Tell the shop to call me. I'll educate his ass. You better find somebody to trust me. I'll tell him the same thing Tip told him up at BMAC yesterday. If you ain't got nobody in there who knows what the hell they're doing, maybe you need to hire somebody that does.
Right.
I told Marie about it tonight.
What'd she say?
She said, seriously? I said, oh, yeah. She said, she's been around you way entirely too long. I said, yeah.
I think it was. I would have said that before you and I together when it comes to the truckie thing, because you don't know what you're doing, then, you know, admit defeat.
No, you wouldn't have.
Shut up. You don't know.
I seen how you was up at camp. It's like that break you had bad up at camps that time.
I I did what they told me to do.
I know. It didn't work either.
Nope.
How many times did I adjust that brake up before you got out there and back? I'm tired of cranking that damn thing. As I got one mind, I caged it that time. But anyhow, I was surprised. Robbie didn't call.
Yeah, Robbie was on there.
Oh, was he? Mm-hmm. You talked to him?
No.
Oh, he didn't call. He didn't cue in?
He was on there for the longest time. Holly was on there.
Huh. I knew Holly was on, but I didn't know Robbie was.
Yeah, Robbie was on.
Should have just touched you.
Yeah, phone. I got a phone call, so I got
what
on.
What are you hiding for? Huh? Do what, Lou?
I'd gotten a phone call, so my alarm went off that the show started, and I was on a phone call, and I had to get off, so I got in on the show late.
Oh.
I got in an hour early first.
Huh. If it had been Ed's show, he wouldn't even had it. He wouldn't even had nothing scheduled until about 5 till.
I scheduled about 5:30.
Yeah, with Ed, you don't know when you're going to have one, when you ain't. He only has a show whenever he gets damn good and ready. He feels like it.
Tribal weather right down there right now, so he'll have.
Well, when he can't get out and ride his motorcycle, he'll do the show. But when it's nice weather and he can get out and ride that damn bike, he don't want to do nothing. Ah, it's whatever. Doesn't matter. What are you doing? Sitting over there.
I'm in Topeka running through town.
Where are you at, Topeka?
Yeah.
He's not there, Jeff. He's up on this thing.
Yeah, we haven't really got any. We didn't got any snow here to amount to anything. Just a dusting. That was all we got. It's been colder than hell out here, but we haven't had any snow.
Hey, you're supposed to sit up.
No,
sit up.
Now, I was surprised to see Green Bay, Wisconsin didn't have any snow on the ground.
Huh?
Really?
No.
Well, yeah, it's the backside of the lake.
Got a shitload.
It's been coming in just a few inches at a time up in Colorado. Sometimes it'll stay and then add to it. And some of the drifts are getting around Goodland, Kansas, are getting pretty high.
Keep coming through.
No, but you can feel a lot of bumps, and I think that's why. It might sound pretty hard.
Hmm. Yeah, it's... I got out to Indiana night before last, and I was going across 30 out there over around Warsaw and Columbia City, and that you get over west of there, there was quite a bit of snow over there because they had the parking lots. You could tell where they had plowed it, and they had a lot of it pushed up. But here we didn't have from here all the way to Indiana, there wasn't enough to just a dusting on the ground. Wasn't even enough to hardly cover the grass. Like I said, it's been down cold. I mean, it was in single digits all day yesterday out there when the wind chills was like -4 or something like that out in Indiana, and I run around out there yesterday. But that's another reason I didn't worry about what I was doing yesterday, because there ain't no DOT in his right mind going to stop way a truck when it's -4 degrees outside. They're not coming out of that car. They're going to sit right there in that car where it's warm unless they see something that really catches their eye. They're not going to bother you. Yeah, if you're going to do that outlaw thing, you do that when the weather's bad. That's why I bitch all the time. I said, DOT, it's a crock of shit, all these inspectors and stuff. Because I don't care where you go. When it's snowing and blowing and raining and colder than hell, or else if it's 90, 100 degrees outside, you don't see them guys. They're not going to get out of them cars, out of the air conditioner, out of the heat. But in the summertime, when it's warm, how come they want to have them 72-hour checks and then brake safety weeks and all that shit? How come they do that in the summer? Why don't they do it in February, January, March? Why don't they have them then?
Right.
They always do it
right
in the summer. And I asked the DOT man one time,
you got a point.
I said, does safety stop when it snows or when it's cold out or when it's raining? He said, no. I said, no, they don't. These trucks break down where it's raining, snowing, blowing, freezing rain, cold, whatever. I said, why is it that we don't see nobody when the weather is bad and nasty, but as soon as the sun starts shine, comes out, starts shining, everything dries up? I said, they're like fleas. He looked at me and just kind of grinned and went ahead with what he was doing. And it's the truth. You never see them. When the weather's bad, they don't. You might see them, but they ain't doing nothing. But as soon as it warms up a little bit, that's when you see them. With the exception of New York. I will say that. New York ain't prejudiced. You get up there around that thruway and stuff up there around Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester. Them guys up there don't give a damn. In the wintertime, and it's been like that for years, in the winter, they trade their creepers in for sleds. That's no shit. In the wintertime, when the DOT stops you up there in New York and it's snowing and blowing and they're out and they're checking, yeah, he's got one of them big old hats on, come out there looking like Red Baron. When he comes over out of his car, he'll go back there and open the trunk, and he'll pull out one of the big plastic boat sleds that kids use, and he throws that down on the ground, and when he plops his ass down on it, starts dragging his ass up underneath that truck from one end to the other, he's doing his job. First time I seen that, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Yes, sir. The creeper will not. The creeper won't roll in that snow, but that sled, you know what I had one tell me one day? He said, it's nice. He said, we lay down that sled. It's right on the ground. He said, we can slide right up through there on that snow, grab the axles, and just pull ourselves right up through there. And he said, it slides on that snow nice and easy. Plus, the creeper, you're up off the ground just a little bit, so it's hard to get underneath the axles and something on some of these trucks and stuff. That sled, you're laying flat on your back underneath, right on the ground. Just some snow between you. You slide right up through there.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Guys, I'm going to talk to you later.
Yeah, I'm going to get off.
All right.
And have this with Lou for a little bit. I'm going up, and I got to go up and take a shower, and I'm done. I'm getting whooped.
All right. See you later.
So, all right, Jeff.
I'll catch y'all again.
Careful.
When's Tiff doing next show?
Next Wednesday.
Okay. It's only on Wednesdays, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, let's call and talk to her off the show. Yeah, she does hers every Wednesday.
Got it.
So, all right, Luke. Talk to you later. I'm going to let her shut down. I'm going to the shower.
All righty. See you,
bye.
Oh, she hung up.